Anyway, so if you're a woman and it's the morning time, you're not eating anything, it sends a signal to your body to be like, oh my gosh, okay, there's no fuel in the tank. We need something to get by, right? So this is going to kick up stress hormones. It just is. Mm-hmm. It's going to raise cortisol, whether you like it or not. Same thing with if you work out in a fasted state without eating anything, it brings up cortisol, which also brings up your blood sugar. So we just talked about blood sugar a minute ago. You don't eat anything for hours and you're doing stuff. Your body is stressed. It brings up your blood sugar. So this is a pretty horrible way to start your day. It just is.
Hey everyone, and welcome back. In this episode, I'm joined by Jessica Varas, a holistic health and nutrition coach with over 14 years of experience helping women reclaim their well-being. After years of burnout, binge eating, and gut struggles, Jess realized true healing really starts with calming the nervous system and feeling safe in your body. Now she empowers women to ditch the all or nothing mindset and build a sustainable foundation for health without the stress or restrictive diets or trends. We get into the real talk on women's health, from hormones, blood sugar, stress, protein, and the constant overwhelm from all the wellness advice flying around on social media. Jess also shares practical tips from creating balance and redefining self-care in a way that actually feels good. Hey everybody, and welcome to the podcast. Jess, we're so excited to have you here today. I'm super excited to talk about all things women's and hormone, you know, food. And so let's dive right into it.
Yes, I'm excited. Thank you for having me, Steph.
Yeah. Thank you. Jess, what drew you into this kind of work, and what kinds of clients are coming here to you today for all the health issues? I think everybody has their own health journey, but what are you seeing most of?
Well, it kind of comes in waves, and it definitely aligns with what is being talked about quite a bit on social media. I would say a few years ago, it was like all things gut health, and then it kind of moved into, you know, stress and stress hormones. That's been a big thing. I think that's still a big thing, and I definitely talk about that a lot, so I get it. And I think lately, though, it's been just a health overwhelm of like, I don't know where to start. There's so much, it's information overload, which I think we're all kind of there, where we have access to information at our fingertips that it shouldn't be like that. Our brain and our nervous system wasn't designed to just take in constant information. And you can't weed out what is helpful, what's not helpful, what's going to feel overwhelming, what's also, you know, incorrect information, what's just fluff. I call it like social media fluff. So that's kind of what's happening now, is like this disconnection to our body and like, okay, what do I actually need? What's actually right for me? Because I tried this diet because this person said this diet was right, and this doctor said this opposite diet was best. And now I have no clue what to do. And I have all these symptoms and I don't know where to go with them.
Yeah. I 100% think that's, you know, really what's happening here, because there's just so much information. And I think that a lot of times when you just apply the different information that you see on socials, you actually don't understand that not everything will work for you, right? And you don't know what your, I think in Chinese medicine, there's your body constitution, right? And not everything is going to work for your body constitution, and it will be harmful to your health if you apply that thinking that it will help.
Mm-hmm. And I think just jumping from one thing to another, I mean, even if it, let's say it was like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of something non-health related, but, or we can use exercise as an example. Jumping from like one style of exercise to another, to another, to another, it's confusing to your body. And that's actually, your body doesn't want to be confused. Your body does not enjoy being confused. That makes it kind of go into this panic state. And it's like, I don't know what's happening next. Things are unstable. Okay, let me just get the defenses up. So yeah, it's, yeah. And even with exercise, you shouldn't be jumping from one thing to another, even though I know that that's pretty popular too.
Yeah. Yeah. I think when you're not seeing results in one side, because people are into really quick fixes, right? And if you're not seeing results in one side, you're like, okay, I'm going to bounce back into something else. And if that something else is going to work, I'm going to do this other thing, right? Because
that's, we just don't have that much attention span anymore.
Oh, I know. It's pretty bad. And I think too is like, you know, we're seeing these quote results online, but we don't really know what's behind that. Unfortunately, you know, we'll see a before and after picture, for example, of someone and that they look amazing now, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's the protocol or the program that we should follow. And also, a lot of people just aren't transparent online about what's happening behind the scenes.
Totally.
So to take someone like, okay, this is the supplement that I took, or this is the program that I followed, and look, it's on sale, click this link and purchase it. And then we're getting hit with that, like, I don't know, however long you spend online, 10, 20 times a day. So it's all these different, you know, results and programs to follow. It's a lot. It's no wonder it's like confusing and overwhelming and exhausting.
Yeah.
To be healthy these days.
Yeah, completely. And I think that, you know, you talked about stress and stress hormones. Can you go into that a little bit more? What do you think are the common root causes to something like that?
I mean, well, for one, I always like to really first put out there, like, stress hormones are not bad. It's very, like, cortisol is like, okay, I need an anti-cortisol this and anti-cortisol that. Cortisol is not bad. If we didn't have any cortisol, we would just, like, be laying flat in the bed and we wouldn't want to do anything. We wouldn't have motivation. We wouldn't want to get up out of bed. So it's not a bad thing. And it is also designed internally to keep us safe, right? Right. We feel it, like, a good example is if you're driving in your car, driving in LA, this happens all the time, and someone's about to hit you and you have to quickly swerve out of the way. I can feel it in my body, just that quick hit of adrenaline, which is that first surge of stress hormones. And it's your body panics and it's like it just gives you that surge of adrenaline to react, to keep you safe. So it's not bad. Stress hormones are not bad. The issue is when it's kind of just on this constant and there's no really break from it, right? Like a constant, like all day long from the time you wake up in the morning, if you're feeling kind of sluggish or groggy, right? You should wake up and feel pretty good and ready to start your day, right? So from the time that you open your eyes and if your body is just like in go mode and you have no relief from that and you're busy and then you're in traffic and you don't have time to eat and then you have to go do a HIIT workout class and then you have to take care of your kids and then you're running behind and you also have your job. It's a lot. And then on top of that, you have your phone in your hand telling you, okay, you should be doing this if you're bloated and you should be eating that and avoiding this. And what if you have this ailment? It's a lot. So that is like driving your stress hormones up without getting any relief from it. That's really, I think, the biggest issue is no relief, no recovery. And, you know, then this internal push, I think that a lot of women feel to just stay busy. So then it becomes normal to feel constantly like, okay, well, this is just normal for just to feel on edge all the time. And if I relax and I don't feel on edge, then there must be something wrong with me and I'm not being productive enough. That means I'm not getting things done. That means I'm not good enough. And then the cycle just kind of continues and And then it just diverts all of your body's energy and resources to stress hormones, stress hormones, stress hormones. And then you might notice symptoms like, well, where's my period? I've been on it's like a 40-day cycle. My period's missing. Or, oh my God, this is the most miserable period ever. I have cramps, horrible like mood. I'm exhausted. Yeah. You feel anxious all the time. You can't poop, all of the things.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you seeing this across women in their 20s, 30s, and feels like, is that, how does that differ? Like, the life stages.
Definitely, I'm seeing it younger and younger. And what I have to compare it to, this is before the days of social media, is when I was in my, I think I started as a personal trainer when I was 23. So that's, what is that? Not 20 years, like 19 years ago or something like that. So it was a nice chunk of time ago. There wasn't social media, but I was working very closely with women and women in their 20s. They weren't really dealing with the levels of, I think, stress, fatigue, bloat, digestive issues that they're dealing with now. So it definitely, it does seem to be trending like where it's happening younger and younger and younger. Certain like symptoms that maybe women that are a little bit older, later 30s, might kind of notice things that we were able to suppress when we were younger. I also come from the age of Lots of dieting. That's just what you did. You went on the, like low carb or keto. Back in the day, it was called Atkins. So lots of different types of dieting and lots of diet foods, lots of low fat foods, which was all just processed foods. And, I kind of lived that way for a really long time. And then, the symptoms just kind of hit you and your body just hits a wall. And it's like, okay, my body's not. It's not enjoying. This isn't working anymore. Things are not feeling well. I'm exhausted all the time. I have headaches. My periods are irregular. So that I do see that too quite a bit with women that I work with that are a little closer to my age, late 30s, early 40s. But yes, a huge trend, younger and younger, very early 20s, just like I've been constipated for 10 years of my life.
And it starts, I think, when you're being constipated for for 10 years, right? It almost feels that's your norm, right? Which it really shouldn't be, right? Because then you've tried everything and then you're like, no, this is my norm, and you settle into that. So what would you say, how can you get out of that cycle, and what are things you can change? Because I think that, for example, for me, I had really bad nasal allergies for 10 years, and at the beginning, you're like really proactive about doing something about it, right? You're like, okay, I'm going to see this doctor. And I saw so many doctors and they did so many different dosages. And then at the end of the day, I started self-medicating because you just feel like it's overwhelming. I tried everything. I also tried the naturopath. I went to see naturopathic doctors. I did bioresonance therapy. I did everything. And then you're just like, all right, maybe next year I'll figure it out. Yeah. So how do you break that cycle, and how do you change that so that it's not your norm, right? You shouldn't be having that terrible, period, and you shouldn't be feeling bloated all day long. That's not norm.
I 100% agree. I think there's a lot of things, and it really depends on kind of where you're at. I think for a lot of women, and this is, I think this one we could do a whole other podcast episode about, but really believing that you deserve to feel good is that's a pretty big deal. You should feel good. You deserve to feel good. If you're not feeling good in your body, you don't have to live with it or just deal with it. And I think that belief, the beliefs that we have about how we feel in our body, they really impact our health. So first, it's kind of like just looking at the beliefs that you have about your body and your health. And you really have to believe, I don't need to feel like this, and I can get better. There are things I'm going to have to change. It's not going to be easy. It might not be fun. It probably won't be the most fun, but I can do it and I deserve it. I think that's a really big piece of the puzzle. And looking at that is, I think, really important. When it comes to the more practical, to-dos, I think a really great start is just looking at, your morning routine. When I work with a client, I'll have them just do a food log, but it's a food log, but it's also almost like a mini life log in terms of, okay, what time are you waking up? What time are you having breakfast? When are you feeling hungry? How hungry do you feel in the morning? How's your energy? A lot of times women don't even take the time to ask themselves these things. And it's really difficult and challenging if you want to do this overhaul with your health, but yet you have no clue, well, what time am I hungry in the morning? Right? Or, well, I'm not hungry at all in the morning, but why is that? Right? It's okay. It's because the first, right when I get up, I'm doing emails at 7 a.m. That's probably suppressing your hunger. Or I wake up right away and I have my coffee. Or I wake up and I go work out fasted, right? So we're not really looking at those things and asking the questions that we need to ask, like what's going on with my body? How's it actually feeling? Things like that. So looking at your morning routine, and I think it's a good place to start and getting some normalcy going. So if you're like waking up at 6, then you're waking up at 8, you have breakfast one day at 11, then another day of breakfast at 8, it just confuses your body like crazy. So look at your morning routine, write it down. You're not going to remember it. Write down the times, write down how you're feeling. And then from there, just kind of get into some type of a window where you're eating relatively around the same time, you're waking up relatively around the same time. I think that's a really good place to start. And I always start with the morning because that just creates a really positive domino effect for the rest of your day.
So, yeah, I think that I've never actually kept a food journal before, but I think that that's really useful because it starts it really gets you thinking about what you're putting into your mouth, right? Which a lot of times you don't think about. It just becomes sort of this routine where you're just like eating to you know, just, yeah, I think food just becomes this sort of sustenance, right? But I think that you don't really think about what you're putting into your food and what you're putting into your mouth. So I love that.
Totally. And that's, and it's okay, because we can't think about every morsel of food that goes into our mouth 24/7 either. But at the same time, if there's that disconnect and you've been trying different types of diets and you're eliminating all these foods because they're quote trigger foods, right? No wonder it's like confusing of like, well, what should I eat? What do I even like to eat? What do I enjoy eating? What's nourishing, but also easy for me to cook and prepare, all of these things that would be helpful, I believe, like when you write it down, just write it down. It's going to, you're going to have all these ideas swirling in your brain. It's just easier just to write it down and also just to understand how your body really reacts to foods, right? Like, I mean, I'll notice patterns with clients that they won't even like pick it up. Like they'll think that a certain food is causing them bloat. We like look at their food log. It's like, okay, so Monday through Friday, this particular food's causing you bloat, but it's not causing you bloat on the weekend. Oh, that's because I had this, I don't know, a salad right before or on my lunch break at work. Okay, well, we can make that connection there that it's probably not about that particular salad. It's you're eating while you're at work. And that's a really like huge way for your body to kind of be having difficulty digesting food, right? Your body's still in that go mode. You're at work. A lot of people just eat at their desk while they're working. So how is your body supposed to get that signal? Hey, slow down, break down this food and have a calm, nice digestive experience. So anyway, just these connections that we wouldn't even think of when you keep a food log and you don't have to do it forever. I'll have my clients do it for a really short period of time in the beginning and then a couple times throughout our time working together. You can make these connections and it just feels so empowering to understand like I eat this meal and I feel great afterwards. Or every time I eat this, like I'm like tired or I'm bloated after. Like just to understand these things, then you're not going to be like reaching for every headline diet, you know, that you see on social media.
Yeah. Yeah. So how long do you recommend keeping a food log for? And after you keep that food log, right? I think that it's really helpful to talk to somebody like you, because otherwise you'd look at the list of foods and you wouldn't a lot of times make that connection.
Well, I think definitely quality over quantity. 2 to 3 days is really all you need. I would say 2 days during the week, at least one weekend day, because most people, their weekend routine's a little bit different, but you want to put in as much detail as possible, right? Like if you just put down breakfast, eggs and toast, lunch, salad, dinner, steak and asparagus, that's fine. But we want to know like what else is going on in your day and your life and how you're feeling and how was your energy, you know, what happened that day, if anything in particular, right? I worked from home today. That's your body, I guarantee, will be respond very differently to foods on a day that you work from home versus maybe a day that you have to go into the office, right? Like if you have a long commute, all of those things. So a couple days is really all you need, with as much detail as possible. I have my clients use a scale from 1 to 10 for their hunger, for their energy, for their stress, things like that.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. And I love that you talked about nourishing, right? I think that that's such a big concept in Eastern medicine, or at least in Chinese medicine, right? That sort of nourishing your body, and that balance, it's so important to have that. And I think a lot of times in your daily life, you don't really think about balance because of the way we live these days, right? It swings between your day, right?
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about how you see nourishment and nourishing and what types of food do you recommend to your clients?
Yeah, I think, you know, well, I know this term gets used a lot, but nutrient density. Food is always like, does it make you feel grounded? Grounded meaning, does it kind of plant you and bring you right into your body versus you eat something and you feel this, the opposite of grounded, like this flighty feeling or scattered feeling. Like if I know if I eat something, and I love desserts, and I'll eat dessert after dinner because I have something that's already like grounding in my tummy. But let's say if I just eat like ice cream, I love ice cream. Let's say I just eat ice cream on an empty stomach, I will feel like my brain is just like fluttering and scattered and my attention is scattered and just that flighty feeling, Do you know what I mean? So with nutrient dense foods, it's like foods that basically like give you your highest bang for your buck, you know? So that's going to be your quality proteins, beef, sardines. I love sardines. Eat your sardines, but just dress them up, but they're so good for you. I have sardines a couple times a week. And like a lot of colorful foods, blueberries, pomegranate, kiwi, beets, mushrooms. And, you know, it's maybe it's not the most exciting. And I know that there's a lot of these packaged health foods out there that are like, oh, there's 20 different kinds of fruits and veggies in this powder or in this, I don't know, in this cookie or whatever it might be, or in this protein bar. But that's going to be very low nutrient dense because there's synthetic vitamins and minerals. So you really want to view food as like, okay, foods are really like supplements, I believe. And it's foods that's going to help you feel grounded and food that like your body recognizes. And if you do use a packaged food, like for example, a protein powder, a client sent me her food log and I had never heard of the protein powder that she used. So I looked it up and there are like 30 or 40 ingredients in it. That's a lot. I'm like reading through it and, you know, there's all these things that like sound good, but it's like, there's like mushroom powder in it and lots of things, like all kinds of crazy things. And then like, you know, it's like, just eat mushrooms. You don't need that protein powder with all this stuff in it. And there's a lot of synthetic things. And then of course, you have to flavor it because no one wants to drink mushrooms. So
yeah.
Just all kinds of things. So if you do eat a packaged food, like just a couple ingredients in there, just nothing too crazy.
I think that I really believe less is more, and that's sort of how we look at formulation as well, right? As you mentioned, nobody likes the taste of mushrooms. Well, for example, like turkey tail mushroom, it can be mushroomy. It's a little bit bitter. Yeah. You like mix it into that with like, say, some sort of root, right? It's going to be bitter, but you don't want to, it's always a balance between, should we add this taste to it? Like, but you can't just add a taste to it. You need to add bitter blockers. And then you need it to all mix together. And I think that that's what consumers don't think about today, right? You have your single ingredient, then you have your supplements, but then how do you read the label to understand? And also, what is that balance between that and, oh, it tastes good, it mixes well. Like all that stuff has to come with some sort of give and take.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm all for foods that like, if there's something that, you know, maybe it's not the most nourishing, but you love it and you enjoy it. And it's like, you have some good memories associated with it. Have it. That doesn't mean that you shouldn't have like the foods that you enjoy. It's, you just want to make sure that you're giving yourself enough nutrient density throughout your day, throughout your week, throughout your month, variety, of course, too. Like, I think it's okay to kind of cycle through the same foods, but you want to sprinkle in some bit of like variety. So it's not just like chicken and broccoli, chicken and broccoli, chicken and broccoli, right? Yeah. Like that's really, you know, our body needs, our gut needs that diversity. So
yeah.
I mean, but that's pretty simple. Like there's how many different types of berries, switch it up, even just like buying different types of apples or different types of potatoes or onions. Like that's variety right there for your gut. So it doesn't have to be, you know, super complicated. Different types of mushrooms.
And I think that balance for me makes a lot of sense. So you mentioned like you love ice cream, right? I like salads, right? And in traditional Chinese medicine, you're not supposed to eat salads because it's too cooling, right? Yeah. It's cooling for your body. But I mean, sometimes on hot days, all you want to do is like have a salad and, you know, like a light salad. So like and even with my grandma, she would have salads, but actually what we would do is she would have like a ginger tea to neutralize, right? And it's just sort of that balance. It's not like I'm eating a salad every day. To be honest, like on most days, I'm probably eating like a bowl of noodle soup because I feel like it's like giving me like a warm hug. But it's that balance that I feel like I need in my life.
Yeah. And I think, you know, this comes down to just like knowing how your body responds to food. Like the whole ice cream conversation. I love ice cream, but if I were to eat it every day, like I probably wouldn't feel great every day. And I definitely feel it, like if I eat ice cream and then I just kind of plop on the couch, like if my body doesn't utilize that sugar, like if I don't go for like a walk, I feel yeah. it. It hits me. It spikes my blood sugar like crazy. And my brain is like, it's like something is poking my brain. And then my blood sugar comes down and I'm just like, ugh. And I don't like that feeling.
Yeah. So can you talk a little bit more about blood sugar levels? I think that that's something that it's on people's minds, but actually you don't realize the spikes and everything until you maybe do like continuous monitoring. Or I mean, that was like a big journey for me because I had gestational diabetes twice. And so, and that was like before they came out with the continuous glucose monitoring thing. And I was pricking my fingers like close to 10, 12 times a day. And like there were days. Yeah, it was horrible. And there were days when you're like, I ate so well. I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have chocolate cake. I didn't carb overload. I thought it was like so good after my Korean meal, and literally it spiked like none other. And afterwards, I think I had like a major breakdown because I was like, this is just too much. I can't do it anymore. What kind of advice would you give your clients on that?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is with blood sugar, like your body will tell you like literally in real time that something is off, but do not ignore it. If you ignore it and just kind of like, oh, this is normal, you're going to have bigger issues down the road. So speaking of symptoms to not be ignored, I would say the biggest ones is like fatigue after a meal. Like if you're tired after a meal. And usually it doesn't come right away. It might come maybe 30 minutes to an hour later where you're like yawning, especially after lunch. You're like, I need some coffee now. Or if you're hungry shortly after a meal. So what's happening is you eat anything you eat, it brings your blood sugar up. And this is normal. This should happen. Otherwise, you would not be alive. The problem, though, is if that meal is really significantly spiking your blood sugar. Your blood sugar is climbing much higher than we'd like it to be. We'd like it to climb, right? And when it's all the way up, there's nowhere for it to go but come crashing down. So that crash that comes down, you will feel something. You might feel fatigue. You might start yawning. You might have a headache. You might be hangry. That's a really big symptom too. You might just feel really anxious and like, you know, kind of like suddenly, just really anxious, like anxiety is coming over you, you're feeling really worried, you're starting to have very worrisome thoughts.
Yeah,
that's definitely not normal. And you don't want to be experiencing that or ignoring that. Sugar cravings, that's another one too. Maybe you feel okay, but then, you know, you eat something and a couple hours later, or maybe at night, you're like, oh my God, I need something sweet. And this is, you know, putting aside, you know, if you're like close to your period, that's kind of a little bit more normal if it's around your period. Your blood sugar is more sensitive around your period. So if you do get cravings, it's normal. You want to eat a little bit more to kind of balance that out. But that's really the main thing is like, you don't want to be ignoring these symptoms. Your body is communicating to you, right? If you're sleepy at 2 p.m, it's not bedtime yet. You should not be ignoring that, and your body's communicating to you. If you're waking up, I call it like the blood sugar mirror. If you're sleepy at 2 p.m, and then 2 a.m, you're like waking up randomly, that's definitely a sign that your blood sugar like is getting thrown off for sure.
Yeah. And I think, what about things like intermittent fasting? I think that's such a big trend these days. But for somebody like me, when I talk to my endocrinologist or even like a Chinese doctor, they'll tell you that's not good for your body type.
Yeah, they're right. Because you're a woman, so it's not good for your body type.
Can you talk a little bit more about that? Because that's when you go online, it's just like, there's so many health benefits and yeah, you're going to lose a lot of weight. And this is how people have always lived. Yeah. What do you think about
that? Well, I mean, what I like to do is, I know like people love to argue about this online, but like if I'm talking to like a client that's like genuinely wants to know, like, is this good for me? I heard it's good for me, or I tried it once before and now it's not working anymore. So it's like, all right, let's discuss this. So first thing I like to do is like, let's take away this label intermittent fasting. We take away the label. Let's just talk about what's actually happening here. You're waking up. You're not having any food. usually till around, everyone's different, but usually 11, 12, or 1. It depends how, I think, regimented you are. Some people are really strict on the times. Other people, they're a little bit more relaxed. But for the most part, we can, let's just say 12. So you're waking up, you're doing life. You're not eating anything until 12. Now, if I just think about that without thinking about any label or what it's called, it's just almost like common sense that after I haven't eaten anything in my sleep for 8 to 9 hours, and I'm going to start my day, which for a lot of people, it's the busiest time of their day. They're up, they're going to work, or they're bringing their kids to school, or they're going to school, they're doing something. Then you're going to put no fuel in your body. Like what, yeah. That just thinking about that doesn't make a lot of sense. And our body just doesn't run off of thin air, which again,
yeah,
it seems to be common sense. And I try to like break it down in a way that's really simple and looking at just the day to day of this. And what happens here when your body, when you're a woman, it's a little bit of a different effect for men. It does depend though, for a lot of men, if they do have like a blood sugar issue or detox issues, they shouldn't be doing fasting either, but it's another podcast. Anyway, so if you're a woman and it's the morning time, you're not eating anything, it sends a signal to your body to be like, oh my gosh, okay, there's no fuel in the tank. We need something to get by, right? So this is going to kick up stress hormones. It just is. It's going to raise cortisol, whether you like it or not. Same thing with if you work out in a fasted state without eating anything, it brings up cortisol, which also brings up your blood sugar. So we just talked about blood sugar a minute ago. You don't eat anything for hours and you're doing stuff. Your body is stressed. It brings up your blood sugar. So this is a pretty horrible way to start your day. It just is.
And
most people do it for, go ahead.
I was going to ask you about sort of the long-term effects, because I think that intermittent fastings only happened really in the last few years, right? But, and I think that when I look at people, it's like, okay, well, I'll do this intermittent fasting for 6 months, right? And then I'll be like, oh, this is actually, it gets easier and easier. So you're like, I'll do it for a year. I know people have done it for like years now. Like, what are some of the long-term effects of that?
Well, a lot of people, I would say, go into intermittent fasting to help with weight loss. They're like, you know what, I've tried a lot of things and I've heard, you know, so-and-so said that this is going to help me lose weight. It helped them. So I really want to try it. Nothing else has helped. Yes, potentially you can lose weight. I think the term lose weight, though, is it's kind of used very loosely. To lose weight means you're going to also inevitably lose quite a bit of muscle mass, which I talk about this a lot. That is one of the most detrimental things for women when it comes to their metabolism, losing muscle. We want to do everything we can to maintain muscle. This is like very important. And again, that could be a whole other podcast in and of itself, but you want to make sure that you have muscle mass. Now, and this is going to go into your question of the long-term effects of this. You lose weight, great. Let's say you lose 15 pounds. Okay, I'm feeling good. I love it. This is great. Eventually, because this always happens, your body does hit a wall. And I have worked with a lot of women, older women that have done intermittent fasting or done some, I mean, essentially it's kind of like a diet, right? So the no breakfast diet or the no eating till noon diet, whatever you want to call it. Eventually your body does hit a wall. You might hit a plateau with your weight loss. You might gain the weight back, but now your metabolism is kind of a little bit more on the sluggish side because you've lost weight, because you've lost muscle mass, right? So we don't want to do that. Another thing too that is really, really important when it comes to weight loss and why we want to do it slowly, why we want to make sure that we're doing it in a healthy way, in a way that's not harming our hormones, is that losing weight really quickly, it just floods the body with toxins. So we don't want to be mobilizing toxins, right? And just flooding our system with that when we lose weight quickly. Losing weight quickly, you know, when you hear people talk about, you know, in a month I lost 20 pounds or in 2 weeks I lost 10 pounds, something crazy like that.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. I think everybody's just always trying to get results really quickly, right? But then
right.
You're not thinking about the long-term side effects that, and that longevity, right? Because it's just not normal.
Yeah. And it's also, I mean, a lot of people can maintain it, but eventually life will make that also really challenging for you. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have things come up. Hunger will, I always like to say, like, hunger will always win. Eventually, at some point, you might get hungry in the morning. You might find yourself traveling where you're eating at different times. You might find yourself with family and friends celebrating something food related in the morning. It is a really tough one to maintain. There are some people that will argue that. They're like, no, this actually makes my life easy. I can get up. I don't need to think about food. I don't need to cook. I don't need to pack food in the morning or whatever it may be. So yeah, there are those people that do love it.
Yeah. And so you talked a bit about muscle mass, right? And that is so important for women, right? Yes. To maintain that, especially as we age. And there's a lot of talk about protein. How much protein should we take? Like, what is the balance? Because, you know, then you have, I load up on my meat. Should I do I need to supplement with protein powder? And how much? Like, what are your thoughts on that?
Yes, I'm really happy to see that push for protein. That is another trend that's kind of like made its way in the last year. So I'm happy to see that women are talking about the importance of protein. I do believe that quality does matter. You don't want to be overdoing it with like 3 protein shakes a day and you're like, I'm great. I got in my protein for the day. I don't believe you need to be obsessively counting your grams of protein. You can do it once just so you get an idea if you have no idea how much protein you're eating. But protein's pretty easy, I think, to kind of take a look at, like just visually. All of your meals should contain protein. That's kind of hands down. And I like to say, like, just make protein the star of your meals. If you do that, you're probably going to be okay. It's not going to be perfect every day. I know there's days when my protein intake will vary. I try to aim for over 100 grams. I'm not trying to really do like 1 gram of protein per pound of body weight. I know that that's very popular too. That's definitely like an old school bodybuilding method, which I think that's fine. I don't think that's like absolutely necessary. There are days when I get under 100. I just kind of know it based off of what I eat or how much I eat. Maybe I'm getting 80 grams and it just is what it is. But I think if you kind of shift your focus, instead of like counting the grams or weighing your food, you don't have to do that. The focus should be to maintain your metabolism, to keep you full, and for your blood sugar. Like, there's so many like benefits. It's like protein should be the star of your meal. It shouldn't be bread, even though bread's delicious. That should not be the star or the main of your meal. It shouldn't be only vegetables, even though, yes, you need your fiber and your vegetables. That's really important. That could be like its mate, your protein's mate or your protein's bestie. But if you kind of just make that mindset shift of like, is my protein on my plate? Can I see it? Is it there? Perfect. And let me build my meal around that.
That makes a lot of sense. I think from like the Chinese medicine side, right, it's so much like balance and incorporation, right? And that's the same with like a lot of like Eastern or at least Chinese cooking, right? There's like, yeah, your plate of vegetables, but then a lot of times like your meat is like sort of just incorporated. Like there are a lot of like dishes that are, everything is together.
Yes.
And I think that there's like some sort of balance to that. And then at the end you have like, or at the beginning, I think, you know, back in the day I used to have my soup at the beginning, right? And then your soup also has certain ingredients in that. You have like your pork bone, you have your carrots, like it's all together in one sort of thing, right?
Totally. Yeah. My grandma, she was Filipino, and that's exactly how she would cook. And obviously, she was not thinking about like macros and balance and is protein the star of my meal? It was just kind of, it was just normal. It was just like, here's the protein of the day. A lot of soup, lots of broths cooked. You cook those bones down, extract all the nutrients from it, throw in the veggies, really for, I think she did it for flavor. I don't think she was doing it for like fiber. It was like for flavor.
Yeah.
And just what she did.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I think that there's something about, you know, back in the day, right? Our grandparents would cook such nourishing meals, right? And it would be such a balance, right? That's something that I feel like we don't do enough of sometimes.
Yeah, I think it's tough. Like finding the time and energy for, I would say, the average person is really challenging. And when you have your phone where you can just press a couple buttons and someone's going to bring you hot food to your door, it's almost like I could go to the grocery store and buy all this stuff and come home and I got to wash it and chop it and cook it and then wash all these dishes. Or if I pay a little more money, you know, someone can just bring me my meal and it's already made and it's warm. You know, it's tough. Like, people are not working normal hours. People are not having normal commutes. And yeah, it's a lot. And then we're like, kind of always have to be on and be responding to people too in a way that we never really had before. I mean, when email first came out, like AOL, it was like, oh, email, I can email someone. I don't have to call them on the phone and leave a, was it a voicemail call? Is that what it was? On the answering machine, that's what it's called. I couldn't even think of the name. You left them a, yeah, I guess a voicemail on their answering machine. Now it's just like access to anyone and anything all the time. So we don't realize how much of our time and energy that that really takes up. So then, okay, time to cook. And then it's like, oh gosh.
So what is your one tip that you would say to somebody that is super stressed, you know, just living the modern life, right? And what is that one tip that you think is easily that you can do to really change your life?
Well, so this is something that I did maybe, I think it was last year, was your phone has a very cool setting where you can look at your screen time and you can look at the time that you spend on your apps. And I did that and I was like, oh my gosh. And it just blew my mind the amount of time. And I get it, you know, we're also multitasking. So maybe I'm like making a smoothie and looking at my phone at the same time, right? But it blew my mind the amount of time that I was spending on my phone. And it's like, what else could I be doing with that time? And also, it's nice to just have my own free time, even if it's 15 minutes, where I'm not bombarded with stuff and information and I'm just with my own thoughts. And just sprinkling that in throughout your day will really change a lot for you. But I do it with clients. I'm like, okay, let's do it. Grab your phone. Let's do it together. Go look at your screen time. Go look at how much time you spent on your app, like on Instagram or TikTok or whatever last week. And they're like, oh my God, they're like mind blown. And
yeah,
you know, I think that sometimes it's good to have a little bit of a little eye opener like that, just to kind of see like, wow, I'm really investing. We don't realize like you are investing your time and energy and your parts of your soul onto something that, what is it giving you back in return? It's probably just giving you a lot of like overwhelm and like, oh, I need to buy this and do this.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
a little bit less of that. And you will find that you have a little bit, maybe not a lot, but a little bit more time to just be with yourself and, you know, just be okay with like having that little extra like quiet time, whether you want to read or go for a walk or just sit. I don't think we have enough of that anymore.
I totally agree. And I love your screen time tip. I think that when I found out that I could do that, it literally gives me a weekly summary of my screen time now.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
I'm always like, okay, scary.
I know.
But yeah, I think that I love your approach to sort of holistic healing and feeling your best. And I think that it's really like starts with food and then your daily routine. And then it's just this holistic every day. But I love that you make it so approachable. So thank you so much.
I try to keep it simple. I think less is more.
I completely agree in this day and age.
Less is definitely more. Less is more.
So Jess, for our listeners, how can they find you?
They can go to my Instagram. We just talked about phone breaks. When you have your 10 minutes of social media time, it's Nourish with Jess. You can also go to my website, nourishwithjess.com. And you can also, if you need a little break from this amazing podcast, you can listen to the Healing Beyond Food podcast on Spotify or Apple.
Amazing. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for hanging out with us on the Nuchi podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, we'd love your support. Leave us a rating, drop us a review, or share it with someone who'd enjoy it too. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button so you never miss an episode.